Step forward. We'll move to the fourth case of the day, United States v. Gary Small.
May it please the court, I am Demetrius Evans on behalf of Gary Small, the appellant. Before I begin, Your Honor, I would like to apologize on a review of my brief. I realized that there were some errors that needed to be corrected. I would like ask leave to correct them.
Material things or just
typos? Typos.
Well, if they're material, it's okay. It's up to you, but as long as it's just obvious typos, it's probably not necessary.
I hope that they're obvious. I hope that they do not reflect on Mr. Small's argument at all. Your Honors, Mr. Small, Gary Small, was indicted on perjury charges as well as obstruction of justice in the United States District Court. However, though he was indicted on those charges, he was actually sentenced on a very lucrative narcotics conspiracy that he didn't have anything to do with. In 2002, there was a trial in which his cousin, as well as many others, went to trial on a narcotics distribution ring. Mr. Small testified in that trial very minutely, but not regarding any drugs, only regarding whether or not he had placed a gun in the trunk of a car of one of the defendants. Now, the appellant's brief really goes to the way that the district court sentenced Mr. Small. My whole question, as I was looking at this case and writing the brief, was whether or not the district court was aware that it did not have to apply all of the enhancements. I look at them as layers. So the district court looked at the sentencing guidelines in respect or with respect to obstruction of justice and perjury, and because the sentencing guidelines said if those are the charges, then you must apply 2X3.1, which is accessory after the fact. Because it said that, the district court seemed to me to be saying that I am directed to strictly apply those.
Well, but let me just say, the district court, seems to me, did just what it was supposed to do in that it began with the guidelines for obstruction and perjury. It saw the cross-reference to 2X3.1. It went over there. It sees that the base offense level is 6 levels lower than the offense that was obstructed or in which the perjury took place, namely the narcotics conspiracy. And it then proceeds to calculate the guidelines range. And in this post-Booker world, we've been very clear that before you know what advice, quote-unquote, the guidelines are giving you, you have to have a correct calculation under the guidelines. And I don't see, I mean, it seems to me you don't even think you should have gone to 2X3.1, and I just don't see that.
Well, it's not that I don't think he should have gone there. It's that when he is using language that says, I am directed to go there.
Well, because, right, and 2J does redirect him to go there. Inside the process of figuring out the guidelines recommendation, there is a sequencing that he correctly says he has to go through. But then at the end, once he's done all of that, he says, actually, I think a sentence at the low end of the guidelines, and I recognize they are guidelines. I think he's perfectly aware that they are now advisory. After Booker.
I think, Your Honors, that before you can make a determination as to whether or not, I mean, everyone is sort of aware of the post-Booker climate. And saying I'm aware that the sentencing guidelines are advisory and not mandatory, but not actually explaining why you believe that and not going back through a balance, an analysis that takes into account other factors that that are statutory from 3555.
3553. But what we have said, perhaps rightly or wrongly, but what we said in Dean was that if you're giving a sentence inside the guidelines, you don't need to give much of an explanation. The further you deviate, maybe the better your explanation has to be as to why you think a 3553A factor dictates a different sentence. But this district judge tells us, anyway, that he's thought about it and he thinks that a sentence at the low end of the advisory guideline range is a proper sentence.
Your Honor, I believe that he does say that. It's the lack of explanation. It's the lack of going through for a proper review that bothers me here, as well as when we look at accessory after the fact, and we it's applied to Gary Small. The sentence for the underlining offense or the offense that was used, that is the narcotics distribution, that was such a large case that...
Well, that's the reason for that, obviously, is that it's more serious to commit perjury in a case with greater penalty potentials. If you commit perjury in a failure to file an income tax return case, somebody who's not the defendant, then you get charged with being... Or you go to the guideline for accessory after the fact. It's a pretty small guideline range there, or number suggested. If you commit perjury in a murder case, the underlying offense is obviously much greater, and the perjury ramifications are much greater. So it doesn't make just obvious good sense to look at the underlying offense and apply that guideline as the judge did here?
I do think that perjury in this type of case is very serious, but what Mr. Small perjured himself on was so minute, and it had nothing to do with the drugs. It simply went to one detail of the case, and that was whether or not there was a gun involved. As well as it obviously wasn't a very well thought out testimony. It didn't work. It didn't change any of the jurors' minds. So the seriousness of his perjured testimony in respect to the entire case, I have to question. And then when I look at the note, the application note for what we determine is the underlying offense, it says that there needs to be the conviction. I question if the government wanted to, you know, from the beginning to charge Mr. Small with accessory after the fact, they could have done so under 18 U.S.C. 3. But this, they did not do that. It seems to me that they did not believe that he was an accessory after the fact to this narcotics case. But then this sentencing guideline, the way it works is to go around about and try to get Mr. Small involved or say that he was somehow involved in the narcotics when he clearly was not.
You want to save your rebuttal?
Yeah, you can reserve the rest of the time for your rebuttal if you wish.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Huff.
Hey, please, court, counsel. Good morning. My name is Bart Huff. I'm here arguing on behalf of the United States. Judge Dara properly followed this court's opinion in Girardi, which Your Honor, Judge Mannion published, authored, and applied the plain language of Application Note 1 to 2X3.1 in determining that the defendant's reasonable foreseeability was irrelevant to calculating the base offense level. That appears to me to be the most contested issue. In addition to the one that counsel argued most in her time, and so I'm going to move to that. Gary Small's testimony was not a minute portion of this case. He was not a very good liar, but he was a liar. And had the jury believed his testimony, it would have gone to very serious charges in the underlying case. the conduct with which Mr. Small was testifying about was taking a Tech 9 to a gun battle at this drug spot in Chicago Heights, which is across the street from an elementary school. Both Mr. Lawrence and Ms. Smith were involved in that conduct. Had the jury believed Mr. Small's testimony, they could have been acquitted of that conduct. The guns went not just to the 924C counts that were charged, but they also went to the drug conspiracy that was charged. Mr. Small received a substantial sentence, but he lied about a very substantial crime, and therefore I think it is reasonable. In the appellant's brief, he does not argue that it was unreasonable, but it was a very reasonable sentence for this conduct. Unless the panel has specific questions about any of the guidelines issues, I would just ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Do you have anything to add, Ms. Evans?
Your Honors, I just wanted to add that while the United States versus Girardi was cited by counsel, it also is a pre-Booker case. And I believe that this case doesn't fall squarely within Girardi, because in this case, the specific facts.
Go on, you've got time.
Give him a minute. Yeah.
The specific facts were. The specific testimony of Mr. Small had to do with the gun. And Girardi. Sorry.
Well, you said that the gun was the key issue here, and that was obviously he was testifying, taking credit, if that's what the right word, for the gun, and trying to remove the blame from the two people who were being charged. And it's a pretty serious issue in this case.
It is, Your Honor, but 108 months was not balanced out with what he actually testified to. I just, in conclusion, ask the court to look at the way the narcotics charge is balanced in this case with the perjury and find that it was not reasonable. Thank
now,
you.
Were you retained counsel in this? Or
yes.
Appointed?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. All right, this case will be taken under advisement.